The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Community column,
She's
The Bit and Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome.
Task show
and now,
lined up.
Here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Good evening. This is Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel, and this is the Bob Siegel Show. I have here this evening with me two fantastic guests, and the subject will be apologetics. But just want to welcome you here this evening, and if you do want to call in at any time, the number is 888-344-1170. That's KCBQ. And this is Mike Friedenberg as the guest host this evening. But this evening, we're going to be talking about apologetics. And I have two very accomplished apologists here this evening with me. I'm going to first introduce Kevin Conover. And Kevin is the founder of Educate for Life, a high school apologetics ministry. And he is also the undergraduate apologetics teacher at the high school that actually my son attends. I just realized that just a little bit ago. And my son had a fantastic course this year. But one of the reasons we're here this evening is, and I'll let the Ross and Kevin talk about it a little bit later, is that they will be doing an apologetics conference on the 21st of July. But anyway, so Kevin is with the Shadow Mountain Community Church and works with Pastor David Jeremiah there. He was voted Teacher of the Year 4 years in a row and was presented and has presented before the San Diego New Atheists and Agnostics, Parenting on Purpose, the Donovan State Prison, and many other venues. He has also been a guest on KPRZ with Michael Law and is currently earning a master's degree in apologetics at Biola University. The other gentleman I have here this evening with me is Ross Chenault. Ross has received his BA from Bethel College and his master's in Christian apologetics from Biola University. He is the director of Standing Firm Institute and the director of Ratio Christi at San Diego State University. And I guess we'll have Ross explain what that is to us as well. Okay. Anyway, he is the author of Standing Firm, a handbook of Christian evidences. And along with his wife, Wendy, he is also the author of Back to Basics, a handbook for Christian beliefs. So welcome, Kevin and Ross. Thanks. You for being here this evening.
Thank you, Mike.
So I actually... I'm not a full-time apologist or do not make my living as in apologetics, but I've always felt that it was an important part of my faith. And to be, when I became a Christian as an undergraduate at University of California, Santa Barbara, I mean, I just lapped it up and just, read everything I could. And Josh McDowell and, both Evidence Demands a Verdict and then the much drier Evidence Demands a Verdict Part 2.
Yeah.
And, many, many books and Irreducible Complexity, books on evolution and, so I really did, appreciated the boost it gave to my faith, just knowing that there's a rational basis for Christianity. And when we talk about faith, it's not blind faith. And I think that's one of the misnomers out there is the idea that faith is blind faith. And I personally don't believe that it's blind faith. I believe that it's faith based upon evidence.
Yeah,
and that
absolutely.
May not always be right. A physical evidence. But it's the kind of evidence that if you have a good friend that says they're going to show up every day and they're always on time and that's their history, you've known them for 10 years and they always show up on time, then it's reasonable to have faith that that person is going to show up when they say they're going to show up, even if you can't see them physically driving their car and track them, by GPS.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we can't just our faith has got to be based on something. It's not just blind faith. I don't just trust my wife for no good reason. I trust her because she's been faithful to me for 12 years, because I dated her for 3 years before that. And she has a history. If somebody comes up to me and says, hey, you know, I saw your wife down at the bar last night. I'm going to say, no, I don't think you did. I know who my wife is. And I can, with good faith, faith based on evidence, tell somebody that, no, you didn't, because of the fact that the evidence says that's not going to happen. My wife wouldn't do something like that. And the same goes for Christianity and the Word of God. It's not just, we don't believe it just because. We believe it because there are over 2,000 archaeological finds validating the history that's presented to us in the Bible. So it's faith based on evidence. And in fact, faith that's not based on evidence, blind faith, is actually dangerous. And ultimately, it can end up causing a lot of trouble, I think, in your life and in the lives of those around us.
And that is an interesting point, is I think that is unbiblical faith, though I do believe personally that a lot of Christians do have that kind of faith. And I think that's out of the it's a misunderstanding of what the Bible says. You know, faith in things unseen, and it's sort of like, and you want, you know, and then there's also the passage where they say you want evidence, you know, and that's put down as you wanting evidence. But those are very much a certain context to those passages.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I once had a fellow. He was selling me financial insurance. He was giving me financial advice, and we got into a discussion, and I ended up asking him if he went to church anywhere. And he said, you know, I'm kind of a science guy. I'm not into that faith stuff, you know. And I was kind of, you know, I said, hey, listen, I'm into science too. But just because you're into science doesn't mean you can't be into Christianity. If our God, if God is the true God, if the God of the Bible is the true God, then He is the God of science and the God of the Bible.
Yeah.
They're not mutually mm-hmm. exclusive, as yeah. Some people seem to
think. One thing I always try to point out too is that. Modern science itself came out of the Christian Middle Ages. There are books like The Genesis of Science, How the Christian Middle Ages Gave Birth to Modern Science by James Dunham, and other books. And so this false little thing that people say, oh, I believe in science, and they try to make it sound like, well, I follow reason and you follow faith. Well, we wouldn't even have modern science if it wasn't for Christianity, which that's where modern science came out, with Newton and the other... most of the founders of modern science were Bible believers.
And in fact, there's a book, How the Irish Saved Civilization, I think is a book out there. And basically it talks about that it was the church that mm-hmm. during the Dark Ages actually was the place where knowledge was conserved and protected.
Right.
That without the church, it would not have been. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's kind of a misconception. The Dark Ages, you know, was something that a lot of times people, you know, try to put back on the church, but it was actually the church was actually acting as the Enlightenment during those ages, really. But you know, before we dig a little deeper into apologetics, let's hear a little bit more about your guys, your organizations, your ministries, and let's start with Ross here. And Ross, I noticed that you are the director of the Ratio Christi at San Diego State University. So, what is that?
Well, it's an apologetics organization. It's been around for several years, but here in recent years, they have a new president, Rick Schenker, and his goal is to have 500 campus ministries established around the country and other parts of the world as well. When I first was involved last April, there were about 12, mostly on the East Coast. Now there's probably 50 or 60 or so, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. Ratio Christi means the reason of Christ, and our goal is to establish the voice of reason, the voice of Christ at the university. So we have, you know, we meet weekly. We try to build a group of students, who, believers or skeptics, whoever want to come in, and we have a weekly meeting, and have some smaller events every year, and hopefully a larger event a year, like a debate between a Christian theologian and an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just getting it going in a state. Sort of went on the back burner a little bit. There was a lawsuit recently that was, it's been around for several years, but the Supreme Court sort of didn't go against the former ruling. And it's sort of silly, but what has come out of that lawsuit is that if you have a constitution that you're developing to submit to the college, you have to not only allow... you know, and an atheist to be a member, but you have to allow them to be a leader as well. So, so because of that, it was a little put on the back burner somewhat. But my goal is to get it going, hit the ground running here in the fall mm-hmm. to build and to work with the other campus ministers at San Diego State So that's what that's about.
So actually, that does bring to me that question, which you just basically alluded to, which is, how do you work with groups like Campus Crusade and InterVarsities? There's a lot of other organizations on right. campus. So right. how does that all work together?
Well, our goal is to not be in competition with them, but to work alongside them, to offer apologetic workshops, to give, and just my just we using the word apologetics a lot. I'm not sure if we defined it for everybody.
Okay, but go ahead.
Okay, but essentially, it's in my view, it's what's called pre-evangelism. On the road to salvation, there are potholes, there are little things in the way, little obstacles. We clear those by answering people's concerns, their questions. Sometimes they bring up intellectual issues. Sometimes they're smoke screens. They're not really honest questions anyway. So part of the tactical approach for using tactics in your evangelism, apologetics is simply a tool for evangelism to clear those obstacles to get back to the gospel. Okay. So not everybody will need apologetics, but when they do need, especially today in the skeptical age that we're in, we need to be able to answer their questions.
Okay. So. And then you've written a couple of books here. And kind of give me a quick summary of, you know, what the purpose and, you know, okay. the reason, you know, somebody might be interested in getting them.
Well, essentially, the first book was called Back to Basics. It's a central Christian belief. And I wrote with my wife, Mindy. The one that's about apologetics is called Standing Firm. And essentially, it's an apologetic, it's a catechism book, but for apologetics. So a question, answer, scriptures, and little memory statements that are committed to memory. And so if a student is in a secular college and their faith is being attacked, at least if they have three or four statements that they've committed to memory to respond to that skepticism. That's sort of the idea. If you don't know anything else, at least know this. This was my idea for the book. It's sort of introduction to apologetics.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's good there. So probably spend a little bit more time. You know, obviously we'll be talking about apologetics, but we're coming up here on a break here. But Kevin, now you teach at Christian High.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, you were the teacher for my son this year. So I just put that together just before the show here. Let me just ask, how long have you been teaching kids in apologetics now?
I've been teaching about 6 years now, apologetics. And I love it. And it's really what I believe is God's calling on my life. And I just have seen so many kids being devastated by their professors as they go off to college. Even my own peers, when I graduated and when I went through college, just seeing certain things, the answers are available, but the kids aren't getting them. That's the problem. And if they were able to hear these answers, I think they would be able to make the choice that God is true and the Bible really is His word.
Well, it's really important work, and I definitely want to explore more when we get back on that subject. And one of the things I do want to talk about is scientism as well, because I think that's what we're dealing with nowadays in today's culture. So, please do join us, because I know we're going to have some interesting calls coming in, and we'll be right back in just a minute or so.
Thanks.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound. You're more beautiful.
Okay, well, welcome back. This is the Bob Siegel Show, and this is Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel. And we have here in the studio with us Kevin Conover and Ross Chenault. And we were just talking to Kevin about what he's doing in terms of apologetics, teaching high school students apologetics. And I want to continue with that conversation there. And, from the time you were a student to, teaching apologetics, I mean, is there anything that you've seen change in the last 10 years at all? I mean, there something dramatic, or is it pretty much the same, or any trends you observe?
Oh, it's very dramatic. It's unbelievable to me how dramatic the change has been. I never expected it to be. The attacks against Christianity today are overwhelmingly more hostile than when I was in high school. And the trend was just starting at that point in time. And I mean, there's always been attacks against Christianity, but I think they've stepped up to a whole new level. And kids in public schools specifically, I went to Point Loma High School myself, kids in public schools are dealing with pressure, outside pressures that are much greater than I think I had to go through myself. And that's part of the reason I got into this, teaching apologetics, is because of that fact. And the statistics right now, people are becoming very familiar with them. 70 to 75% of Christian youth leave the church after high school. Barna has validated this. These surveys, multiple organizations, USA Today was reporting on this also. And the difference, too, now is that it looks like these kids are getting into their 20s and they're not coming back. Whereas before they were coming
back.
That's
very interesting. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
So they're not coming back.
That's right. That's what they're seeing. The trend is becoming. And this is why it's more alarming than maybe it has been in the past, was that, hey, they're going to get married. They're going to have kids. They're going to come back to church. But the reality is that since the 1990s, when you had about 86% of people claiming to be Christian, that number has dropped to around 75% now. And we're not losing out to like Mormonism or Islam or other religions. It's losing out to actually this almost atheistic, agnostic viewpoint. And so I've been teaching this now for about 6 years. And I had a parent call me up and say, hey, my kid doesn't go to a private school. And I was wondering if you could start teaching a class outside of your school. And so I started Educate for Life. And I teach every semester now kids anywhere from 20 to 40 kids that what I teach in the private school, I also teach now outside of the school.
Okay.
And if anybody wants to sign up for that, they can sign up at educateforlife.org.
Well, speaking of your students, I believe that we do have a call coming in from a Kelly Schultz. And you know Kelly, correct?
Yeah.
Kevin? Well, so why don't I have you go ahead and introduce Kelly, and let's bring on Kelly.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, it would be great to have her on. She wrote me a letter a couple weeks ago just talking about an experience she had over the summer. Kelly is a very bright girl, and she had the opportunity to go to a Princeton summer seminar and had a fantastic experience, great time, learned a ton, but got to use some of what she learned throughout the year. And I just thought it would be cool to hear her share a little bit about how apologetics has blessed her learning to defend the biblical worldview.
Okay, well, I believe Kelly's on with us. Hey, good evening, Kelly. Are you on here?
Good evening. Hi, Mr. Carmen.
Hi, Kelly. How you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
Great. Kelly, if you wanted to just share a little bit about what you wrote in your letter, that was such a blessing to me. I just thought it would be an encouragement to others just to see how important apologetics is and the process up to it. I know you were selected out of quite a few applicants, and then how the week got started and how you were able to actually use apologetics and how it influenced some of your peers.
Okay. Well, there was about 1,500 applicants. About 300 of us were selected. And it was not necessarily a religious camp, which was my first experience outside of a religious setup system, so that was very pretty unusual for me. But we were set up into focus groups, and basically the purpose of the focus groups was to have us discuss with students every controversial, awkward subject we could think of. And on Monday, at the very beginning of one of these sessions, the topic was homosexuality. And one girl raised her hand and said, well, every religious person in here raised your hand. And I was the only one who did. And she told everyone just to be very tolerant and very considerate of my feelings and my belief, because I wasn't going to be prepared to discuss it. And I was kind of offended, but it was kind of like I expected her to be hostile, not so considerate. But so they just started discussing homosexuality, and I think they expected me to only be able to recite scripture. But when I started coming up with statistics from your class and medical costs and diseases and things that actually made sense to them, it was shocking to them that a Christian actually could use logic to defend their point and not just quote scripture at them the whole time. And many people come up to me and they're like, well, don't you feel bad that you didn't talk about God once? And aren't you a Christian? Aren't you supposed to talk about that? And I said, I did. I talked about the logic that he created, and that's what apologetics was to me. And through our discussions about evolution versus creationism, you know, they expressed me that, you know, from the beginning, God creates heaven and the earth. And I was able to use statistics and science and discuss with them stuff that they understood and stuff that they had never heard before, which was shocking to me. And it was a really good experience to be able just to have those intelligent conversations that they didn't think I was capable of just because I was religious.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then you were talking a little bit about, too, how what happened at the end of the week at some of your peers who came up to you. Can you share with us a little bit about that, too?
Yeah, some of the people in my focus group who I actually had been debating with all week about Christianity came up and said, by the way, we're Christians too. We had never heard of the stuff you were saying before. We had never heard that necessarily from our, but we had been in public school and everything you were saying had contradicted everything we'd ever learned. And we're Christians too, and we just want you to think that you were alone, but all week we didn't know what to say in defense of it. And they were apologetic that they couldn't defend the faith with me, and that, you know, they had slightly argued with me about certain things, but it was just that they didn't have the information that I had, and I understood that, and they wanted me to forward on to them what I had learned in my own apologetics class because they had never heard of it before.
Well, Kelly, this is Mike Friedman again. I just wanted to compliment you having the courage to speak up. Obviously, having been prepared and having the ammunition with which to speak was a big plus, but I know there's a lot of students, you know, that would just still be quiet because, you know, especially that topic, it's a very tough topic. So, I do commend you for having the guts to speak up. It's kind of funny. It reminds me a little bit of my sister back when she was at Davis, you know, as a Christian. She was one of there was a class of 300 students, and she was the only one that ever spoke up. None of the guys ever spoke up. It was my sister who spoke up. It was kind of shocking, you know, on some of the stuff that they were putting by there. So I think that's a good sign because you'll probably have plenty of opportunities to speak up in the future, too, I imagine.
Thank you.
So and what other subjects did they cover besides homosexuality?
We talked about evolution versus creation, premarital sex. That was a big one. We talked about that one for a long time. Mainly atheism, premarital sex, and homosexuality were the three that my group covered the most.
Okay.
Yeah. And in all three of those, a lot of people ended up agreeing with my point. They had just never heard of what I was bringing to the table before. And those were Christians, and those were arguments they would have wanted to use had they known about them.
So did that experience really strengthen your own faith, too, seeing how you were able to dialogue with them like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it just made me really thankful that I had the opportunity to know that and to give them that information and to pass it on, because I think they'll use it a lot of times, too.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Kelly. That's really a blessing, and thank you for being on the radio with us.
Yes, thank you very much, Kelly. And once again, you know, keep up the good work. We do need folks that have the boldness to speak the truth in love, and it sounds like you did that. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Okay. So anyway, that was Kelly Schultz, and she is a student at Christian High and one of your students. So that's a great example that you don't just have to, you sit there, you know, ignorantly listening to things that aren't true, but it does take some work to prepare. So, you know, that's one of the things we'll be talking about is, you know, some resources that you can get, some books that you can get if you're interested in, you know, and feeling more confident about defending your faith in a rational, you know, methodical fashion. And we will continue that discussion when we get back.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Welcome back. This is the Bob Siegel Show. And if you want to join the conversation, you can call in to KCBQ at 888-344-1170. And I am sitting here in the studio with Kevin Conover and Ross Chenault. And the subject is apologetics and, you know, being able to share your faith in a rational, reasonable, and, you know, loving way, I would think. That's probably part of it, too, right?
Absolutely.
And with that said, one of the things we were talking about a little earlier was the growth of what I would call something called scientism, and just the place of honor that science now has in our society. And, you know, everything is, you know, if it's not scientific, people aren't interested. Even people that are, you know, touchy-feely arts majors will talk to me about science. You know, I have an engineering background myself and a lot of science. It's kind of interesting how much people want to talk about science, even when they don't have any scientific background themselves, but they're pretty sure that it's, you know, the position that they're here is scientific and the Christian position is not scientific. So, you know, you guys hear that? I mean, just, you know, that the young scientist.
Yes.
The nature of Christianity?
Yeah, scientism essentially says that unless you can verify it by the five senses, then it's not really true. And this is one thing that Nancy Piercy brings out in her books, Total Truth. She was a disciple of Francis Schaeffer, about the upper and lower story, where true knowledge is what you can find through science, and anything that's not through the five senses, what you mentioned, the word scientism, then they don't categorize it as knowledge. So issues of morality, you know, your particular faith, whether it's Christian or whatever, that's your opinion, that works for you, they don't really put it in the category of real knowledge anymore. So that's one of the areas we need to really train youth to be able to show you can't do that. What they've tried to do is define science so tightly that God can't get in there.
And yeah, that is interesting, because another thing that, and certainly a topic that you both, I'm sure, deal with on a regular basis, is the very unscientific nature of evolutionism. Mm-hmm. Because it's not something that you can verify through experiment. There's lots of stories. In fact, I had a course in cognitive science when I was in school, and my professor, who was not a Christian, but he liked to talk about evolutionists and their just-so stories. You know, you make a general statement, and you throw in the term billions and billions of years, and then all of a sudden it makes it so. I mean, that really effectively is what it comes down to, because I've looked at the stuff, and I just don't see, you know, anything that shows anything right. Going from micro to macro evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now—
No transitional forms. I mean, there's things that's just—it's interesting how unscientific scientism can be. And I use the mm-hmm. word scientism because I think it connotates sort of a religious element more than just science.
Yeah, and that's definitely out there. I mean, I think if there's any atheists or agnostics who are evolutionary bent, they're probably screaming right now that you said there's no scientific evidence for that. But the reason this distinction often, this kind of missing each other argument comes up is because generally speaking, evolutionary scientists don't distinguish between micro and macro evolution. They see them as one and the same, whereas generally creationists or intelligent design advocates will delineate between the two. And so you have this creationist yelling, there's no evidence, and meaning macroevolution, and evolutionists yelling, there's tons of evidence, and they're focusing on micro, which is change within species or adaptation. And so this is where you get a lot of argument. And I think this is where I kind of want to emphasize the conference, reaching the closed-minded, in the sense that it's really important that we keep an open ear to those we're discussing and dialoguing with, because you can learn a lot about the person's position by listening to them. And it's something that's really important, and that I think as Christians, God expects us to do is respectfully listen to what somebody says, because then we're better able to present our viewpoint and not miss each other and just end up mm-hmm. saying, closing the door and saying, let's not even talk because you're crazy and no, you're crazy.
Yeah, the other thing you realize too is to think that, to understand that we don't always need to be on the defense, because if we just use what's called the Socratic method of asking questions, you just ask them and you turn the tables on them and get them to tell you why you should believe what they believe, you'll find that they don't really have a very defined worldview, and it's just sort of platitudes that they hear from the culture. Like, well, the Bible's been translated so many times, you can't trust it, blah, blah, blah. So when you ask them, well, where, have you done any research on that? Well, no, I just have heard that, you know. it's the same thing with the science issue.
That's a pretty typical response. I mean, what are the, in a situation that's similar is the whole thing on global warming. if you ask somebody, you know, what the primary greenhouse gas is, they'll invariably say 99% of the time it's CO2, but it's actually water vapor. And 95% of the greenhouse effect comes out of water vapor, and mankind's effect on water vapor is zilch, zip, nada. But the average person has no idea that that is actually the case, you know. And, you know, so an evolution, right, micro versus macro. Yeah. As you said, there's plenty of evidence for micro. Mm-hmm. You can see it, and that's somebody can be verified. Mm-hmm. But at least I'm not aware of, you know, real clear-cut examples of speciation. You know,
moving from species to the other. And, you know, the other thing with scientism is, too, is that scientists sometimes are given much more authority than they deserve, much more kind of almost a godlike reverence to an extent. But I have the statistic here in a survey data collected from 1986 to 2005. Scientists reported that 14% of their colleagues falsify or manipulate data. 72% perceive their fellow scientists as guilty of other questionable research practices. Even atheist paleontologist Stephen Gould wrote in 1994, "The stereotype of a fully rational and objective scientific method with individual scientists as logical robots is self-serving mythology." So basically what he was saying is, listen, the unbiased, fully truth-seeking scientist is a myth. I mean, we can even look at Einstein, 1916, right? He proved that the universe had a beginning. Through mathematics, he proved it. But he didn't like his results. So he fudged his math, and he ended up making what he called the biggest blunder of his life.
Yeah, he was corrected by a Russian scientist for that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so so there he is in 1916. It's right in front of his face. But because he wanted a steady state, eternal universe, he didn't want to agree with the Bible that there was a beginning. He ended up fudging. Here's this epitome of this of a scientist, and yet he's vulnerable to those same biases. And so we got to be careful about giving too much credibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about Stephen Jay Gould there?
That was Einstein I was talking about.
But previously you mentioned.
Yes, that's right.
And his theory of punctuated equilibrium, correct?
That's part of it, yeah.
Which is kind of interesting, which is basically a theory that says, here's an explanation why you'll never find evidence as to why how speciation occurred, right? I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's completely unfalsifiable.
That's exactly right, yeah.
And isn't that one of the definitions of true science, is somebody that can be falsified?
Often that's included in the definitions, yeah.
That's right there. Well, we'll be discussing this and other subjects of apologetics. In fact, there's more than just the scientific aspect of things, but there's the moral arguments, things of that nature. And when we come back, that's what we'll be talking about.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Mike Friedenberg, guest hosting for Bob this evening. And in the studio, I have with me Kevin Conover and Ross Chenault. Both of them are accomplished apologists. And in general, it's a great topic, but also there's a specific reason they're here this evening. And there is a conference coming up on the 21st. And I'm going to turn it over to Kevin and Ross to talk a little bit about what's happening there and, you know, why you might want to show up and actually... you know, hopefully, you know, have a very good experience.
Well, as far as what I'm covering, my topic is tactics for evangelism, and what I do in that is to demonstrate. It's good to have a framework that you follow when you witness to someone. It's just something you've sort of studied beforehand, so you know where you're going, and you don't let them take you down too many rabbit trails, you know, kind of thing. But essentially, you want to always start with the gospel. And then sometimes people will raise intellectual issues. You want to answer those and take those away so that you get them back to Jesus. What are you going to do with Jesus, right? Because a lot of people will, My theory is they'll take as much as your time as you will let them. They'll answer you. You've probably had this happen before, Mike, where people will answer you one question after the other. You don't even get the first question answered. They're on to the next.
Well, if you dare to actually start answering their first question in a logical, reasonable fashion, they immediately will ask you another question.
Right. And they'll keep you so busy that they've exhausted you to where you've just sit there, answered one question after the other, then they leave. Like I said earlier, if we turn the tables on them, get them, ask them questions.
Okay.
So anyway, the goal is to get back to the gospel. If they raise an intellectual question, you cover that, get back to the gospel. If they think they're not a sinner or something like that, then you go to the law. You show them the Ten Commandments. You show them the areas where if you're guilty in one point of the law, you're guilty of the whole thing. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. So that's sort of a tactical framework. The other thing is there are tender-minded people. There are tough-minded people. There are those that are open to testimonies and that kind of thing, tender-minded. They like stories. They like, is God going to fulfill their emotional needs? Then you have what I call the engineer types, the tough-minded people who want everything verified through science, this kind of thing. So knowing this sort of framework, law, gospel, apologetics, tender-minded, tough-minded, and being able to recognize logical fallacies, self-defeating arguments that people use and expose those in a nice way, not antagonism or anything, and then subtly bring them back to the gospel and follow the 1 Peter 3:15. We do it with gentleness and respect. But we still expose their faulty arguments. We reveal that, and we get them back to the central issue is, what are they going to do with Jesus Christ?
Okay.
Yeah, so we titled the conference Reaching the Closed-Minded because we all have friends, neighbors, relatives who they seem like they just shut down if you bring the subject up. And so our hope is to equip the church, Christians, to be able to start a dialogue. And I found that the best way to reach somebody for Christ is to slowly begin to chip away at the walls they've built up. I remember one time in college, there was a fellow, good friend of mine. We were in physics class, and all semester I was trying to get him to go to church. I even offered him $20. Hey, man, $20, okay. I'll bring you to, come to church with me. Yeah. He was like, no, he wouldn't even take that. I was like, what? And but you know what? After I was chipping and chipping and chipping here, eventually the physics professor pointed out the second law of thermodynamics. It just came up in class, and I said, look, listen to this, what the teacher is saying right now. Pay attention. And, after the semester, I didn't see him anymore, and I wondered, hey, what happened? 3 years later, I saw him in a coffee shop, and he came up to me, and he said, hey, Kevin, I wanted to just thank you for what you did in that physics class. I've actually been praying that God would bring us back together because you started me on the road to knowing Christ, and today I'm a born-again Christian.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I want to, the conference is all about getting people comfortable with good questions. Bob Siegel's going to have, his topic is three questions we can ask our skeptical friends to make people think, to plant some seeds. My topic is witnessing to non-believers using intelligent design and the human genome. It's a little bit in depth, but when you get a grip on a solid argument and you can use it well, it makes a big difference. And then, as Ross talked about, his topic's tactics for evangelism. And I think people will come away from the conference really blessed and able to go out there and say, okay, I've got something I can use here to reach out to that stubborn person in my life who I want to go to heaven, who I want to know Christ, and to follow the Great Commission and actually be Christians and salt and light.
Okay, well, that's good. And Bob, yes, it's good to be the three questions, I guess. The three questions Socrates, I believe, ultimately is, I think I've heard the... heard him give that topic before. So it's, very good, good questions, the Socratic method.
Yeah.
Which is, is an excellent, excellent way to do you use that method yourself in class, Kevin?
Socrates?
Socratic method?
We do Socratic seminars in class. So
okay.
Yeah, it's all about bringing all the students into discussion and helping them to think for themselves. And I think it's Greg Kokel who calls it the Columbo tactic. Is it Greg?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And basically, it's to ask a lot of questions and help people come to the conclusions on their own rather than trying to force somebody down, force something into a person's mind.
Right.
And it, very effective, yeah.
Well, it's interesting when I hear this stuff here is, besides having an engineering background, I also have a background in sales. And, and it's just basically in general, anybody that teaches, persuasive speakings, asking questions is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in... the I'm just kind of tossing it out here, but one of the things is that, you know, once somebody states, you might say, an objection, and that's an you know, I don't want to be crass, but to some degree, you're sort of selling. To some degree, you're doing persuasives.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Once somebody states objection, it's and they put their ego behind it, it's a little bit harder to deal with. Mm-hmm. So let me ask, is there ever any question, any idea that maybe sort of answering in advance, trying to get the questions answered before the person actually puts that out there on the table and says, here's my position. But if you answer it before they have a chance to do that, then that sort of sometimes can be effective. Now, that might not be the case in all cases, but that's just a thought there.
Sure, I understand what you're saying, just in how you're going to reach somebody in love and in without creating a, you know, you don't want to create animosity between the,
right.
the two parties, and you don't want to, you're not there to make somebody look like a fool. That's not the goal. The goal isn't, hey, I'm right, ha ha ha, look at look at how I just made a fool out of you. But the goal is to actually gently, as Peter says, to gently lead somebody to Christ with respect, so that anybody who speaks harshly against you is ashamed of that because you happen to be so nice.
One thing I've noticed too is that the skeptics, the atheists out there, they're really like atheist evangelists these days. There's this new atheist movement, is what it's called. And it's the same old tired arguments. Some of these things were answered hundreds of years ago. But a lot of people don't know that. You know, a lot of Christians don't realize that. So they think, oh, I got this really tough question I got to deal with. But you can pick up any good apologetic book. It's probably covered there. So back to what you said, to anticipate what people are going to say. Once you get into a certain subject, in today's mindset, contemporary culture, you pretty much know where they're going to go with it. So you could sort of anticipate what they're going to say and sort of overcome that. Mm-hmm. And then as you overcome these obstacles, like I said before, you're on the road to salvation, you get these potholes cleared away, then you're back to, okay.
And then
the gospel.
I have found is that it's okay to say, hey, some things we just don't know.
Right.
For example, I spent a lot of time thinking about free will. And I actually got in a debate with a very smart guy who has happened to be an atheist. And ultimately, it was actually very educational for me as a Christian. This is 20 years ago, I guess. More than 20 years ago. But to realize that I really don't have the definitive explanation of what free will is. Because I looked at it and broke it down. You know, God gave me my soul. You know, I have my environment. I have my genes. You know, where does free will fit in there? Well, it's somewhat of a mystery, but I do behave as if I have it. There is plenty of evidence that it exists, but just because I can't precisely define it necessarily, you know,
the problem of evil and suffering is another one that they'll bring
exactly,
up.
Exactly, the theodicy.
It's a tough issue for any worldview.
Everybody has that problem, and that's another good point. It's not just Christians that have that issue. So, yeah, that's actually a very good point. Actually, I do want to follow up on that point. Because a lot of times it's, you know, the gotcha with the evil one, the evil question of evil and an all-powerful God. But if there is no God, and, you know, you just, when you're dead, you stay in the grave, how does that make things better?
Mm-hmm.
Really. So anyway, we can look at some of those questions when we get back here, and we'll be back in about a minute.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Okay, well, we are back, and in the studio here with Kevin Conover and Ross Chenault, and the subject is apologetics. And if somebody has a question that they'd like to ask these gentlemen, or you've heard some things that you might disagree with, we'd certainly love to have a conversation with you, and you can call in at 888-344-1170. And this is Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel, and this is the Bob Siegel Show. So, the conference is coming up on the 21st, and where is the conference going to be held?
It's It's going to be at the Creation Museum in Santee. The address is 10946 Woodside Avenue North, Santee, California, 92071. And that's a great thing, too, about where the conference is being held is the museum has been completely remodeled, and it's incredible. They're just investing so much effort into just making it a first-class place. They're also providing free refreshments, okay? So that's a big bonus.
Free food there. Well, I've actually, in the last 3 years I've been there, and I have to say it was better than I expected, to be honest. Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, I was expecting something a little bit more, you know, anyway, it was very impressive, actually.
Yeah, it's actually owned now by Scantibodies, which is a scientific research lab. The fellow who owns the museum now.
I've heard of them.
Tom Cantor, and he grew up in a Jewish family. His father actually wanted him to be a rabbi. He ended up getting saved, and he is today a scientific creationist. And so they're just doing some amazing things out there. It's really awesome.
And so if they want to go to a site, it's educateforlife.org. Is that correct?
Yeah. If they go to educateforlife.org, they can sign up for the conference. If they want to pre-register, they can also register at the door. So mm-hmm. it's no problem. And it's a suggested donation. So don't feel obligated.
But if you can't afford it and you really want to come.
Yeah, we're not going to.
We'd still love to have you.
We're not
right?
going to keep you out. Yeah.
Okay. And then a number that you can call in to as well is 619-251-9292. Okay. Yeah. And so that's going to be on the 21st. And, you know, so something that we were talking about a little bit on the break here is the, you know, that's something that you guys brought up, this the tough-minded person versus the, what was the other term?
Tender-minded.
The tender-minded person. Mm-hmm. And let me ask a question here. I really personally believe that it's very rare for the intellectual objection to be the real objection.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
When I say most of the time, I don't mean 51%. I mean more like 90% of the time.
Okay.
It's really not an intellectual issue. If you talk to them long enough and you spend enough time with them, eventually they're probably going to say something like, oh, this Christian did me wrong in high school and I got mad at God or something like that. Okay. Or but I was mad at God because my grandma died or something.
Well,
but at the beginning they'll say, what about those who've never heard in Africa who've never heard the gospel? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I asked that question.
Not to say that with everyone, it's a smokescreen. There are some genuine questions that people have, but I think the vast majority of the time, they're just asking you a bunch of questions so they don't have to deal with their sin and their fallen nature. Kind of thing.
I mean, I would concur with that. I do think there are some legitimate intellectual questions.
Yeah.
And to be frank, the way the church at times presents itself, it mm-hmm. does. There are certain times when you could look at the church and say, wow, it does seem somewhat anti-intellectual.
Yeah, and I don't want to get the wrong idea that even though oftentimes there's something else going on besides the intellectual argument, I don't want to downplay the necessity of apologetics either, because mm-hmm. on a bigger scale, what happens is as people look at the Bible more as myth and fairy tale, it gets less airtime, basically.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is, even though there's always something going on in somebody's heart emotionally, not just intellectually, if we don't emphasize apologetics, the Bible is not going to be respected, and people aren't even going to get the chance to hear
exactly.
the gospel.
We want to be at least sitting at the table.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's very, very interesting. We do have a call in from Michael, so we're going to go ahead and bring Michael into the conversation here. Welcome this evening, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a question. I was wondering if, well, first I would have to just make sure I'm clear. Do non-Catholic Christians believe in the transubstantiation? I'm pretty sure the answer is no, but I just want to make sure that I'm not misunderstood by it for any reason.
Well,
the transubstantiation of the body and blood of Jesus.
Either Roger or...
As far as I understand, there are three major views on that issue. As far as I know, non-Catholic, I'm trying to follow through what your question exactly, non-Catholic believers would not agree that the blood and the body actually becomes the blood and body of Christ. It's more of a symbolic view. There's the real presence view that the Lutherans hold. There's a symbolic view that a Baptist, Calvary Chapel, Wesleyan kind of Christian would hold, and then there's the Catholic view.
And then, so then that would bring me to my to the actual question then, is the interpretation of Scripture for the Last Supper, is does that include when Christ himself stated, "This is my body"? Was did the do non-Catholic Christians believe that at the Last Supper, that in the real presence at that moment when Christ stated
Let me ask you a question real quick. In terms of what the purpose of the show is, to talk about apologetics and engaging the contemporary culture with the gospel, and and our seminar on Saturday, how does this relate to that?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I just was working today, and I heard the show, and I heard apologetics, and I was just very curious.
That's more in the area of polemics, actually, which is theological disputes within the church.
I apologize for that. I didn't mean to throw you off.
No, that's fine. Let me just interject here. Is that I work in nonprofits, and the majority of the people I work with in the nonprofit committee, I happen to be a non-Catholic Christian, but I work with lots and lots of Catholic Christians, and tremendous respect for the Catholic Church, Catholic Christians, and to me though, those are one of those issues that is, you know, I'm not going to say it's unimportant, but it's to me, it's not a salvation issue. It's not a core salvation issue. Right. I'm not going to hold against somebody if they hold the view that there really is transubstantiation, when I don't personally hold that view.
Right.
So we're at the point where we're trying to reach people to say, hey, you know, consider Christ, you know, as the one true God. And then within the Christian community, which I'm just very broad, the universal church, the Catholic Church, with a, I guess in this sense, a small C, as opposed to the big C Catholic Church, is that I think those are great discussions, and I'm not going to say they're unimportant. It's just that that's not what the thrust of this conference is about, which is, by the way, is on the 21st. So this is the conference, though. I think that somebody who's a Catholic or a Baptist or a Protestant or whatever, they could bring their friends there that are not believers, and they could get a lot out of it, and that would be the goal there. And then, you know, if the Catholic tradition is in that church is where they feel they want to be, then, you know, transubstantiation, you know, then that's where they'll be.
Everybody can get a lot out of this conference. I mean, even Muslims would appreciate the creation, evidence. There's tons of it, you know. So whether you're Jehovah's Witness, you know, Muslim, Catholic, it doesn't matter. The conference will be a big blessing to anybody who comes. And will be a very big encouragement, and I'd even say, you know, atheists and agnostics. You know, I go purposely to evolution seminars. Last year, I went to a 6-hour evolution seminar because I wanted to know. I don't want to be closed-minded. I want to know their perspectives. I don't want to know if there's anything behind it. I want to be able to understand it, and I want to be able to dialogue honestly and respectfully, and I want to work with people who want to know the truth. Because that's what I want to know. And Christ said more than 78 times in the New Testament, "I tell you the truth." That Christ was all about the truth. And the truth doesn't need to hide. God is not up in heaven going, "Oh, please don't prove me I'm not real. Don't prove I'm not real." You know, that's not, we're all about the truth. And so when it comes down to it, the more we dialogue, in Proverbs it says, "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." If I'm dialoguing with an atheist and he's pointing out flaws in my thought process, or things I didn't know, hey, I'm happy for that. I want to better understand the truth. And ultimately, I believe we will end up right with the Word of God, which is the truth.
So, yeah, Michael, so I do appreciate you calling in. Is there any other comment or a question you had? Okay, well, thank you, Michael, for calling in there. So that was an interesting distinction, polemics versus apologetics.
Yeah, can we just end with one more? The conference again is this Saturday.
Yes, okay.
July 21st. It's 8:30 in the morning till 12:30. Yeah, it's just half day. So, I mean, you're in and out. It's a lot of good information real quick. And that's out in Santee at the Creation Museum. CreationSD.org is information about the museum. If you want to pre-register, that's educateforlife.org. And or you can just register at the door, and love to see you there.
Yeah. So and let me just emphasize that the registration is at 8:30. It'll be over by 12 o'clock, and then I guess they have some mingle time afterwards. 12 to 12:30 will be the
You can check out the rest of the museum, walk through it, and
Yeah, 12 to 12:30 is actually an open forum.
Open forum. Okay, so there'll be a Q&A then.
They'll be able to ask us questions.
Okay, well, great.
And it ends at 12:30.
So certainly if you're out there and you have questions yourself or you have friends that have questions, you know, do consider bringing them there because I think, you know, they'll hear a lot of very interesting stuff. And, you know, hey, at least get people to think. And that's what we're trying to do. If once you start thinking and start, you know, reasoning, we actually believe that, you know, you're headed the right direction.
Amen.
So once again, I do thank you very much for being here this evening with us. And I want to thank our guests, Kevin Conover and Ross Chenault. And this is the Bob Siegel Show, KCBQ 1170.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.